several differences in Junho and I. Some of them you're already aware of. One of the first differences you may have noticed over the months is that Junho is real prone to being politically correct so he can remain in good with the Clinton types. I'm real passionate about bodybuilding. I do it with a fork and a spoon. I hate those barbells. Renee and I had the great privilege of going to the Pastors and Leaders Conference at Calvary Chapel in Tucson over the past week. It was a magnificent experience. Some of our people were there. It was a great, great time. I got there, and I'd already told Jack. Maybe they don't want to. When Renee and I arrived, I had already told Brother Jack that I didn't expect to find a parking place because preachers tend to take the handicapped spots. He said they won't at Calvary Chapel. I got there and I found two cones in a handicapped spot with Jack standing out front waiting for me to arrive. He moved the cones and I parked and I heard him say into his little radio, "I'm talking with them right now, Junho." And in a moment, Junho was out there and he was helping Renee take the things out of the back of the truck, putting them in the cab. I decided to take the black truck because the red truck is new and I know how preachers drive. That's two now, right? I've zinged them twice. So I decided to take the black truck and just move things back and forth. And I thought, what great servanthood. They had the spirit of servanthood. And I was impressed. I was very, very impressed. Later I saw Junho run the halls. Man can run. He really can. Came out of the auditorium at least twice that I saw with a full head of steam and woe be out of his way. And yet he had time to come and ask me if he could give me anything. And I said, Lord, one day give me that kind of spirit of servanthood, but not today because this is way too much fun. Now, maybe I've been hanging out in the wrong bathrooms over the years. No, everything was like it was. But I went in there and there were five or more men. And I didn't hear one single curse word. Now, maybe I've been going to the wrong bathrooms. Maybe it's low class. I don't know what the reason is, but I didn't hear it. I heard, "How are you, brother?" I heard, "Praise you." "Thank you." "Praise the Lord." I heard that a lot, but I didn't hear curse words. When I was a boy, and see there, that's called misdirection. I had you thinking about one thing and I impressed you immediately. If you heard what I said when I was a boy. If you think I can remember back that far, you're going to think maybe I have something to say tonight. When I was a boy, lived on a farm, Big Fork, Arkansas. I don't know where it got its name. I have no idea. But I lived there for as long as my parents would let me. It used to be a town of about 400 people. It had dwindled down in size to, well, it was big enough, small enough that my dad decided he wanted to be mayor. His friend decided he wanted to be sheriff, and there were not enough people to outvote them, so they were. In order to go to a city, you had to go to Mena, which was 20 miles away, almost exactly. Now, Big Fork is a beautiful little place. And I'm going to have trouble with my glasses. Is it better that I see this or that I see you? Has God ever painted a prettier picture than that? That's called Butcher Knife Creek. I don't know where it got its name. I think it converged with another creek, and that's where the name Big Fork came from. But isn't that gorgeous for those of you who have always lived in Arizona? This is actually water that is running downstream. Now, It is. See, back in Arkansas, if you can drive a pickup truck across it, it's called a branch. If you can't get a pickup truck across it, it's called a creek. You have to have a boat to cross a river. Now, you know the difference. Here, you walk across the river. 20 miles away was Mena. It's a small little town nestled in the foothills of the Washita Mountains. Another gorgeous place. So we've got two idyllic little places for people to live. But in between, danger and evil lurked. because there was a road, and I was a teenager with a car. It was the perfect road on which I could practice my Richard Petty moves. Some of you are old enough to remember who Richard Petty was. I never left home, though, without remembering. I knew who my daddy was, and I knew what my daddy's rules were. And that is not I bowed my neck, that is I bowed my neck. I rebelled. There is something worse than rebellion. There was one curve on that road that was marked 35 miles per hour. It was a vicious little, they call the boggy curve. Marked 35 miles per hour. I could do it at 60. I just always prayed, don't let me meet one of my daddy's friends, because he'll stop by the house just to chat. And in the course of that conversation, Dan, saw your boy up there on boggy curve. He's driving real peart-like. Because I knew who my daddy was. I knew what his rules were. But I bowed my neck and I rebelled and I did what I wanted to do. When I was 20 years old, I was grown, gone away from home and on my own, making my own decisions. And that was a bad thing to do. We start making our own decisions. Renee's uncle is Maurice Hodges. He was a minister of education at churches for over 30 years. And he says that's where most people get into trouble. Up until that time, they have the direction and they're living on the faith of their parents. But when they get away from home, they have the opportunity to do the things that they might not have done if it hadn't been they were grown, gone away from home and on their own. I was grown, gone, but I knew who God was. I knew what God's rules were. I didn't bow my neck. I bowed my neck. I rebelled. But now there is something worse than just rebellion. My first job was at KENA Radio as a radio disc jockey. High profile, glamour job. Everybody in town knew who I was. And for the first time in my life, girls did not say, "Hi, Jerry. It's a big old tractor you got there. It's kind of greasy and dirty. I don't want anything to do with it, but it is a big tractor." Instead, they said, "Hi, Jerry. That sure is a pretty convertible. Would you take me for a ride sometime?" And I pulled in all of the macho cool I could. I said, "When? When would you like to do that?" Now, I knew who God was. I knew what God's rules were. But I bowed my neck and I rebelled and I did what I wanted to do. Now, whether you know it or not, convertibles are expensive. They cost a lot to buy. They keep a lot. Cost a lot in maintenance. But I tell you what, you put a blonde in the middle of the front seat of a convertible, you got expenses, boy. It's hard to maintain a blonde and a convertible. And so I had a decision to make. I had to decide whether I was going to pay attention to God and follow His rules, or I was going to continue to bow my neck and rebel. There is something worse than rebellion. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Now, you know which one I chose. Whether I was going to tithe or I was going to keep my blonde and my convertible up. Did I mention I was 20 years old? Making my own decisions. How many times did I hear my daddy say, "All right, go ahead, have it your way"? More than once, and every time he was right. How many times did I hear God say that? Lots of times, and every time he was right. I only learned later the joy of giving. My grandfather wrote a lot of newspaper articles while he was in his late years. He had become an orphan at the age of a year and a half. By the time he was 75, he owned half the county. He was also the county philosopher and the county moralist. I don't know, has there ever been an 85-year-old man smart enough to tell a 16-year-old boy anything? I don't hardly think so. At least he couldn't tell me anything, but I do have those newspaper articles. One of those says he was driving down the road one day, and there was an old widow woman sitting on the front porch. And he went back to town, and he got a $20 bill, and he put it in an envelope with a note that said from an unknown friend and mailed it to her. Now, he had run several thousand dollars through his checking account that year. He said that was the only dollar that didn't cause him a little bit of trouble along the way. All of the others did. And I thought, what a great thing to have that kind of a spirit of giving. But I still had the convertible, and I still liked the blondes, and I said, later, Lord, later, Lord. So on Sunday, I'd put a couple of dollars in, you know. Hold them like this as you put them in, so nobody around you can see how much you're giving, and hope that the Lord is not looking when you drop them in, because He knows how much it is, but you hope He's looking the other way. I knew what God's rules were. I knew who He was. I just bowed my neck and did what I wanted to do. It's time to find out what that something else is. Let me say a prayer to God. God, sweeten my words, direct them to tender ears, and reach a heart that's receptive. Not what I say, but what you mean. Something worse. Turn to Proverbs 3:5. We're going to look at the things that are worse. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. I looked up the word trust in several different dictionaries, went to the internet. Trust is a very difficult word to define because it's an emotion word. All words that define trust are emotion words. It cannot be quantified. If I say, give me 6 apples or 12 eggs, we can count them out. We know how much that is. But we cannot quantify trust. And then when he says, trust the Lord with all of your heart, can you define trust for me? Most of you have heard, maybe you haven't. Trust the little boy that was out in the sunshine playing. It was a beautiful day. And he saw a snake, and he ran into the house to get his daddy, and he heard his daddy in the basement. And he ran to the top of the stairs, and he screamed, Daddy, I need you. Where are you? And he said, I see you, son. Everything's going to be okay. Daddy, I'm scared. I can't see you. You know, when you're outside, the eyes close because they don't need much light. They come into the dark, and they open up. He couldn't see his daddy. Daddy said, I said, just jump, son. No, Daddy, I can't see you. Come on, son, jump. I can see you. That's all that matters. I will catch you. Now, the little boy jumped. Now, how many of you had heard that story before? Nobody? See, she was a former Baptist, too. And that made the Baptist rounds for years and years and years. Maybe I've got a whole bunch of them saved up. Well, maybe you have also not heard the one of the wheelbarrow, the man about to go across on the wheelbarrow, pushing it across a long rope. And he says, how many of you think I can go across? Oh, everybody, yeah, we know you, Are you sure? Yes. Come up here, young man. And the young man went up, stood beside the man. And he said, you really believe, put his arm, you really believe I can go? You really trust that I go? Then get in the wheelbarrow. The Lord sometimes has to have a wheelbarrow for us. We all have times when we are forced to get in the wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow may be marked a problem in a marriage. It may be marked problems in finances. It may be marked health problems. But we have to get in his wheelbarrow. Now, when we first get in the wheelbarrow, thank you, Lord. Thank you. Appreciate it. Oh, thank you for saving me, Lord. And we lean back for the ride. And the Lord starts across the rope. Do you remember the story of a man that took his eyes off Jesus? Something about a boat and water. What do we do when we're in the wheelbarrow? We turn around and we look. Lord, it's all fogged in over there. I don't know where we're going. Where are we going, Lord? Where are you taking me, Lord? That's called hesitation. That's called fear. What do we really want the Lord to do? Take us where we want to go. We complain because we're being carried across the canyon, whatever it may be. We're safe. We're in his wheelbarrow. He is pushing us, but we can't see the other side. Now, if you can say you've never experienced that, you will one day. And if you've never experienced it and you never do, that should be your last prayer. Thank you for saving me from that, Lord. We've all gone through that, or we are going. Lord, what's out there through the fog? I want to know. Now, I'm not sure whether we're trying to find out for sure where God's taking us, or whether actually we just want to be able to redirect him if he's not taking us where we want to go. That's a lack of trust. Then you lean on, if you don't trust, you may have, I'm going to skip that part. This is from Robert Frost, one of my favorite writers. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled, and that has made all the difference. Now, I don't know whether he was a Christian or not. Haven't been able to find that out, but that would certainly look like. This is the path of those of us that have trouble with the wheelbarrow. You see that one, that big old wide one? Which one, where do you think that goes? The big wide one. C, where does it go? Goes straight and it's smooth with no problems in life, right? Which one are we supposed to take? A. But which one do we usually take? B. We start out with God and then, well, I'm going to try my own thing. And then we find ourselves being pulled back to God, and then we pull away again. Just like on the wheelbarrow, we don't see the other side, so we want to do our own thing. When we lean on our own understanding, we have done three major things. We have usurped God's authority. We have said, I'm not going to pay attention to your rules anymore. I'm going to pay attention to my own rules. We've also denied the omnipotence of God. We have said, he does not know what is best for me. And here's a really good educated word. We have denied the omniscience of God. That simply means that if God is omniscient, God knows all there is to know. We can't even think of the questions to go with the answers that he already knows. Now, when we have done that, turn to Romans 1, 22, 23. Romans 1, 22, 23. Hi, Barry. Welcome, welcome. Who found it? Romans 1 is a roadmap to disaster, the latter part of it. Now, if you take what it said in the latter part of Proverbs 3:5, lean not to your own understanding, put that with the verse 22, professing to be wise, they became fools. When we lean to our own understanding, have we not said we are wise? Have we not said that we're smarter than God? We know more than God. We can accomplish more if we don't pay attention to God. We can do better things than God can if we'll do it our way. Paul is in this letter is actually speaking to the Romans about Greek philosophers. Most of us have heard of Socrates, Aristotle, Plato. One of my favorites is Xenophanes, which is not nearly as famous. And then the Roman best-known philosopher is Cicero, who also set. He's talking about them. They decided they were very, very wise, and they became fools. My Uncle David told me when he was in medical school that he used to listen to the upperclassmen, those juniors and seniors who were about ready to get out. And they would talk about, see, this fact, this proves that there is no God. Now, he was not a Christian at the time. that they would look at these little pieces of medical evidence and say, this proves there is. And he kept, man, I'll be glad when I'm smart enough so that I can be have the proof that there is no God. Then he got to be a junior, and he got to be a senior. And he said it dawned on him one day, it takes a lot more faith to believe there is no God than to believe there is a God. You cannot see any way. You don't have the big bang, and all of a sudden we're all here. Our bodies are in perfect tune with every part of our body in perfect tune with the other. In 1970s, there was a Harvard study that was so well publicized that this Harvard study had proven that the family unit was the most important unit in the world. Well, I thought that's what Genesis said. Maybe I've forgotten, but I'm pretty sure that's what we were taught in Genesis. Most of you may, I may have to come back to this. There it is. Harvard was, of course, the very first university in America. It was started as a Christian education. William and Mary was the second university in America. Words of wisdom. He had the cross that was displayed in the Wren Chapel, said it should be stored in a sacristy to make the chapel welcoming to students of all faiths. Now, I had to look it up to be sure. The sacristy is like a storage closet. They put things in there that they don't need. Now, that's the two major first universities. Now, if we become dumb, he says that after you become dumb, after you become fools, what Paul says, go to 1:24 and 25. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. God gave them up. We've all had to give up something. It may have been a child who has rebelled. It may have been a child that just moved away from home. And it was a happy occasion for both parents and for the children as they moved out and moved on their way. But we've all had to give up, usually, a child. There was a Presbyterian minister back in Atlanta who said that when he gave his child up, he was giving her away at the altar. When he said, her mother and I do, he felt like I was, he said, I just knew I was handing a Stradivarius to a gorilla. He had done so much work. Now, I know that I added a great deal to Renee's mother's prayer life. When Renee went away to school, she was the quintessential Christian girl, a totally untouched flower. She went away to a church school majoring in church music. And I know exactly when her mother found out that she was dating me. I heard the crack of her knees as they hit the floor screaming out, oh, Lord, protect my baby, because she wrote to her and said, I'm dating a country and western disc jockey who smokes cigarettes and drives a convertible. I have one very... Why? No. See, I'd had a Damascus Road experience by then. And I turned from my old wicked ways, and I saw her across a big auditorium. Lord, there's the one. That's the one. And I set my hat. How many of you have ever ridden a cutting horse? Some of you have ridden a cutting horse? Yeah. And you get this little calf out, and you jump back, and you let the horse do all. That was the hardest thing to hem up in a corner I have ever seen in my. Never mind, that's a whole. What was God's emotion? What was God's emotion when he gave them up? I asked Renee that the other day, and we came up with three or four. What was God's emotion? Think about what your emotion was when you gave up your child, whichever way it was. What do you think his emotion was when he said to to those involved in heterosexual sin and just gave them over. And I think he's given us over to that. The statistics that I just passed through, it's evident that he's given us over. But what were his emotions when he gave us up? He gave us his son, Jesus Christ. That was out of total love. And if nobody had ever accepted, it would have still happened because he did it out of love. But what's his emotion when he gives them up? Sadness, just a sadness that we can't imagine. What else?
Sorrow.
What else? Broken heart. I think he was, what, Juno? I think he may have also been angry, frustrated. Just absolutely, I've had it. I've done everything in the world that I possibly could for you. I gave you life. I gave you water. And that beautiful creek at Big Fork or in the bottom part of the Santa Cruz River when it's run. I've given you everything. Then I gave you my son. And what you did was turn from the way that I had prescribed. And his prescription is very clear. We can't say, well, I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm not going to deal much with the other one, but to go to Romans 1, 26 and 27. That's the next set. For this reason, God gave them up to the passions, the vile passions. For even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another. Men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. Can someone define for me the word homophobic? The actual. And I need my water, please. What is the actual definition of homophobic? Fear of a homosexual. What does the media want you to think it is? Yeah, any Christian who is not accepting, according to the media, is homophobic. They have a hatred for homosexuals simply because they're homosexual, and that's just not true. That is not true. You know that it's not true. Not a real Christian. They have a great love, but a disgust for the lifestyle. Jun Ho has been very open about God taking him out to the woodshed. I think you even said one time you had a woodshed that had your personal name on it. Well, with a few of these things that I got involved in, God took me out behind the barn. Now, when you go out behind the barn, you go past the woodshed. God has little bitty switches in comparison up there with the woodshed. Now, the tall timber is out behind the barn. Now, some of you who were raised on a farm know what it means to say, my daddy took me out behind the barn. If you know somebody and you have a difference with them, find a way to smooth it over. Because anybody who's been out behind the barn ain't afraid of nothing. If he lived through that, he feels like he is bulletproof and he can live for the rest of his life. If you've never been out behind the barn with God, don't go. He can ruin you in 3 seconds. Renee and I have been through that. It was my fault. I made a financial decision that turned out to be wrong. And I got in God's wheelbarrow. And oh, it was wonderful. And then I looked around and I couldn't see the other side and it was all fogged in and I got scared. And I wonder what would happen if I just got out right here. And I decided I could probably live through it, only one, maybe two broken ankles when I hit down there. But God had me out behind the barn, and he gave me a whipping. I had two or three other things. I'm not going, well, let me do one if I can get this to come up. This will take just a second, I'm sorry. But it's an old, slow computer. I have another computer. Look, don't encourage him, okay? Don't encourage him. Do I remember which one? Yeah. Let me see if this will bring number one. Now, I'm not promoting a social issue. I want you to see if there are, you've heard of words jumping off the page at you. See if there are two words in this particular, you may find others, that jump out of the speaker. What two words? Or did you find more? I'm sorry, was it not loud enough? Called it a game. Depraved. If we look real quickly in Romans 1, 28 and 32, he gives the list. After he gives us over to heterosexual sin, he then gives us over to homosexual sin, then he gives us over to all of the things listed there. One of those is depravity. Can you think of anything more depraved than getting fun out of attacking someone in a wheelchair, a homeless man in a wheelchair? One of the things is greed. Do you remember what eminent domain used to mean? It used to mean if you owned it, it was yours, right? And now, I'm sorry, Merrill, but I've decided that I can put in a riding stable over there exactly where your property is, and I can make the county more money by having a riding stable, charging the people from back east to come. So I'm going to take your land. And if I can prove it to the county, the courts have said eminent domain used to mean it was yours. Now it just means it's yours as long as somebody else doesn't want it. That is about as much of the extent of greed as you can get. Then they invent ways of doing evil. Did that go off? I know I need another computer. No. I think I hit the wrong, but I don't think it's the computer's fault, actually. I think that's called a PEBCHECK, P-E-B-C-H-K. The problem exists between the chair and the keyboard. Now, I'm a news junkie, and I don't get it from ABC, NBC, CBS. Can you believe that? Now, if she had done that at my high school, they would not have called the police. Hartzell Geyer's office at the funeral home was directly across the street. He was also the coroner, and he would have simply come over and signed the death warrant. Death by natural causes. And if anybody had questioned, you act like that around here, and it's natural, you're going to die. That's the way they keep the county clean. I don't know if the end is near. Junho is convinced it is because of the movement of things into place, particularly in the Israel area. According to this, our time is up. Because he was talking about the Roman Empire, and it's happened to many others along the way. We're just the last, maybe the last in history. No nation has ever been given one-tenth as much as the United States has been given. And yet, we've rejected God. And we have said, we don't care what you say. I'm going to do what I want to do. Thank you. Let me turn. You need this anymore?
Oh, yeah. It's okay.
Maybe I'd move. All right, go ahead.
I didn't mean it.
No? I'll click it again. I'll click it and bring it back on, and you can come up. Wish I'd borrowed a Mac for tonight. Okay. Yeah, you will want this, I assume. No, sit over there.